Welcome to the Catholic Link podcast, the podcast for busy Catholics. My name is Father Rob Adams, and I am honored to once again be joined by Father George Elliott. Father George, it is great to have you on.
It's great to be here, Father.
Big thanks to our sponsor, the University of Dallas, the Catholic University for Independent Thinkers. More about them at the end of our episode. So we are on our episode about prayer and worship, and we're still in Lent, as right now it is March 8th. It is March 8th, yes. And we are still very much into Lent. And by the time this episode drops, I'm pretty sure we're going to be close to what has traditionally been called Passiontide. Father George, will you tell our wonderful listeners what Passiontide used to be and what it is slash is not now?
Yeah, so Passiontide was Lent, and it was called Passiontide because you read the Passion a lot in those 2 weeks. You would read it on the weekend before Palm Sunday, and then you would read it again Palm Sunday, and then Monday of Holy Week, I think it was Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, you read it all again, and then you read it again on Friday. And so it was this time in which you just soaked in the Passion. And some churches now will still do the thing where that week before Palm Sunday, some do it actually on Palm Sunday. That's kind of like how most people have experienced it. They're like, oh, we're veiling images now. But most people are just like, why? Because that's what we do.
Right. Because this is I love when at least at my church, the people are really good. They made the veils.
Nice. I've got some people that made like, too, yeah.
Made the veils. Like, but my favorite one is the one for the altar cross.
Yes. How do they do it? Is it the little triangle at the top and then?
I look like I have like a kite on a stick. Yes. And I'm not like one of these. I'm not one of these priests who's like, I want to look into people's eyes at mass. Like, actually, I fall victim to what C.S. Lewis talks about, where I have made God a spot on the ceiling.
That's the worst. That just irritates me when I pray to
the all-seeing God, I'm really praying to like a spot of mold on the ceiling because. Yeah, but it becomes God to me because that's what I look at and pray to at mass, you know?
Oh.
But so the reason I say this is because my altar cross, when it's veiled, completely blocks any view of anything. But I just feel weird. I'm like, either let me look up at my spot on the ceiling or let me, I don't know. Out, but the cross being veiled just it throws my whole rhythm off. And where to look, I feel like I'm like behind a wall, which I'm also fine with, but it just throws me off. But I say that because I think a lot of people are exactly in the same boat as what you just described this week. So for us now, it's the fifth week of Lent, and Holy Week would traditionally be called Passiontide, even though it's not really called that anymore. Then there's still some weird fossils that have lingered into the current practice. So one of them is what you described as veiling images. But the other one that I also very much love is the prefaces of the Passion. Preface 1 and 2 of the Passion. They're awesome. They're just awesome. Like, I wish I had them in front of me right now, but they are really good. I do them during the regular year on Fridays, like when I do a votive mass or something. I find every excuse to use the Passion prefaces because they're very good. As a side note, I have also, I don't know if I'm becoming liberal or not, but I have also fallen in love with one of the Eucharistic prayers for reconciliation. I think it's 1.
Ooh, yeah.
Because it talks about like before he approached his Passion, his arms were stretched between heaven and earth. You're like, yeah. Yeah. That's, as the youth say, it's giving Passion vibes to me right now. You know, I'm feeling it. But I want to talk a little bit about like why we veil those images, because it's like you said, a lot of people think it's weird, especially when you have those full life-size statues and you put the veils on them. It's very haunted house. You like the bent over Mary and she's got like the purple thing on. You're like, she's a ring wraith. Or if you're Harry Potter, this is a Dementor, you know, like she's going to suck out my soul. But I do think there's something really cool about it. So 1, the reason we veil all the images is to take away aids to prayer. That might sound kind of Calvinist, like it's more pure to pray without statues and things. Well, not necessarily, but sometimes it's really good to feel that distance from God. You know, like yes, the church is a holy place. My home, my prayer space has holy places in it.
Mm.
But it's important to remember that the things I have are just, they're types of the reality, as the fathers say. They point to it. They make it present, but the reality is still a different thing. You know, the icons, the statues, the crosses, they point to the real thing, and they actually make it present somehow, right? It's not just a reminder, but they aren't the real thing themselves.
So would you say that we veil them so that we feel?
Yeah. 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 I think there's something to that, like that's taken away from us in some way. But there's an even deeper meaning that I like better. And that's that the scripture has this idea that the passion of Christ, or the cross, as Paul says, is veiled from the eyes of unbelievers. And he obviously is not talking about the physical cross, because Paul didn't have that. But he's talking about understanding and believing in what happened on Good Friday. And there's something very true about the fact that if we don't live the gospel, Good Friday is not going to make sense to us.
Mm.
The cross does not make sense. Whether we like it or not, we all fall into the kind of like dilemma that Paul says. The cross is a stumbling block to Greeks and scandal to the Jews.
Which one are you?
You know, I'm on the scandal to the Jews right now. I used to be more of the Greeks. Now I think about it like the Greeks, he's talking about very kind of intellectual stuff, like a spirituality that's based on trying to speak to the world, engage with culture.
Yeah.
The Bob Barron type.
Could see that.
Now I feel more, the scandal to the Jews is kind of, I think about it more like as a personal religious experience where you're like, the cross is really hard, because you think like, isn't God supposed to take care of us? Isn't God?
Isn't he supposed to be all powerful?
Yeah. Like, isn't evil supposed to lose? Don't you like care, God? And I feel like that experiencing that is good though, because then you feel a little bit about why the cross doesn't make sense without the gospel, you know? I was even thinking about this the other day. We talk a lot about how like Good Friday is the defeat and then Easter is the victory. Like, I don't know. I think if you read the gospel, particularly John, Good Friday is the victory.
Right. That's literally when he's lifted up, right?
It says, yeah. And it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Because like everybody's crying, you know, it's like, what's going on? And I feel like when we veil our crosses in particular, that we get to experience that sense of like, what the heck? I don't understand this the way that I should. I don't live this the way that I should.
Yeah. There's an interesting thing connected to just like veiling and sacredness, and specifically the understanding of a mystery, right? And it's not the like Sherlock Holmes kind of mystery where if only we could get more clues, then we would understand it, but rather like the mystery that like is, you know, you cannot fully plumb its depths, that it's utterly beyond or greater than our capacity to understand. But you know, when something is veiled, it makes us almost recognize that it's beyond us. It's greater than us. It's more than us. Because when we can see something, we have this sense of like, oh, I grasped it now. Like, now I get it. And so I could see that, you know, within each human being, that this kind of like feeling of like, man, I can't see these things. I don't understand. It almost helps us to really grasp that reality that no, the Christian life is something beyond us. It's greater. We haven't arrived yet.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. There's the not yet part of the gospel. Like I believe in the cross, but I don't believe in it enough yet. I don't embrace it enough yet.
Yeah.
But what's really cool, and this is always one of my favorite things, Oh, it's not my favorite thing as a priest because it's actually a pain in the butt, but it's my favorite thing as a believer. And that's the unveiling of the cross on Good Friday. The reason I don't like it as a priest is because I lack spatial reasoning. So folding the little veil on the crucifix so that like you pull a pin out and like one arm comes off, you like pull another pin out, another arm. Like I can't do that.
Yeah,
and no. Every year I just end up like wrapping the cross like a swaddling thingy. And I'm like, I'm like up there, like unraveling it, like behold the wood of the cross.
And it's just enormous. And so like you're trying to hold it up and sing at the same time. And so it's like,
and then like, you don't even know that melody. Cause you only use it
exactly once a year. Yeah.
15 seconds of the entire year. But like the reason that ritual is supposed to be so cool is that the cross is unveiled for us. And it's unveiled after reading the Passion for the last time.
Mm.
You know, it's after going through Palm Sunday, Holy Week, Lent, that now the cross is displayed for us to see. And that's not just intellectual, it's unveiled. Like the Lord gives us the heart for the cross.
Mm.
And that's why we go up and kiss it. That's why the priest takes his vestments off and you know, humbles himself in front of the cross. It's because of this.
Yeah.
That now we can see it after we've lived it and after the church has unveiled it for us.
Yeah, I love that image specifically. Earlier you said, you know, we veil the cross because we have not yet fully embraced it. And then it's there at the Good Friday liturgy that it is unveiled. And so to speak, we do embrace it, you know, as we and reverence the cross. It's just such a kind of a cool transition right there.
Yeah, I've always found it to be really moving for me. And like I said, I say that as someone who doesn't enjoy the physical act of doing it.
Uh-huh.
It's powerful. I pray that the deacon will be there and it's like 50-50 if he's there. But yeah, no, I hope that our listeners are willing to kind of engage in that process in their own parish. But if you can't do it in your parish, maybe take down the images in your home. You know, I'm not particularly a good person, but I go through my whole house and take down all of my images, not just religious images, all my fun stuff,
like all my everything,
all my posters, all my little action figures, all my little, I have my whole like little Japanese setup over my pantry shelf. I take it all down.
Where do you put them? Do you have like a closet that you just stuff it all into?
Yeah.
Or do you have, you should get the people from the church to make little fitted veils for all of your action.
Oh no, I feel like there's a quasi-religious significance to taking it all down.
Mm. Like tear it down.
And then like, if I'm being dramatic, I like to recite the Byzantine part from the cherubic hymn, right? So I'm like, let us who mystically represent the cherubim and sing to the all holy Trinity, now lay aside all earthly cares.
Yeah.
It feels good. Anyway, thanks for joining us today, Father George. We're running a little long today, but I want to thank all our listeners for joining. I hope this has been a useful thing. Maybe, you know, try to live the Passion Tide as best you can and realize that there's a method to the madness. And there's a reason that we've done this veiling and all this for so many years. But I want to thank you again. And a big thanks to our sponsor. Catholic Link is sponsored by the University of Dallas, the Catholic University for Independent Thinkers. UD is known for its rigorous undergraduate core curriculum and robust graduate and professional programs in business, ministry, education, and the humanities. With campuses in Texas and Italy, the University of Dallas is committed to an education that forms students intellectually, socially, and spiritually for life well lived. You can learn more at udallas.edu/CatholicLink. Once again, thank you everyone for listening. We hope to see you next time.